guys, if you haven't checked up on our social media recently, what have you been doing? I'm at Nick Hardwick, and Jamie is at jamie.hardwick. That's J-A-Y-M-E with a period, and then Hardwick, which is not to be confused with the other Jamie Hardwick, who I tagged a little while ago on Instagram, and she notified me that you may want to get this straight, bud. Your wife may be pissed at you. That earned me the Worst Husband of the Week award. Sorry, babe. Anyway, you guys know that Lose Like Alignment is going off. I'm sure you've seen some of the ads circulating. Hundreds of men now are losing staggering amounts of weight on a daily basis. It's been so awesome to see. And of course, I had no idea that life would turn into this for me or for us. I just had to get the information out of my head, share it with others, see if it could help people reclaim their lives. And lo and behold, it has. And I am just really grateful to be a part of this amazing team. And the most fulfilling thing for me and the program is the weekly interactions that we get through the accountability network. So sign up for that. It is awesome to get personal connections and have conversations and get to understand who people are, what their challenges are, and assist on a very personal basis, on a weekly basis. So as this was all going on, we're getting crazy amounts of requests from the ladies wondering if this program's good for them too. And for me, I said, sure, yeah, it is. But really, since the beginning, I've tried to get Jamie to give my plan a try, and she would try it for a day or two and then basically tell me it wasn't for her. And finally, listening to the requests on social media and through email for a female version, and then getting some feedback back from females who were actually in the program and taking that into account, and then asking and not telling Jamie what could make this plan work for her and for other females, she went, took the parts from the men's program that she liked, modified it to accommodate the female body and your guys' individual preferences, and gave it a try. And I tread lightly saying this to her. Thankfully, she's not around right now. But it's been super cool watching her own this program. She has gained control back over the food, has reset her hunger cues, and has lost the weight she's been trying to lose really forever. I know. I don't think she has anything to lose either, but still, she's getting to a place where she feels great about her body, and that is important. In fact, I just get out of the bathroom, and she says, I've lost this weight, but Nick, I've lost an inch off of my waist. She's taken measurements. So we sent the adjustments back to our design team, and voila, the Lose Like a Lady program is born. We would love for you guys to join the team. If you want to know more, all food preferences and eating styles work within the framework we provide in both the men's and the women's program. We do provide body weight only workouts and daily activities known as every hour on the hour exercises, EHO. But guess what? As we tell everyone, the exercise is the least important component of the plan. It's not required to lose weight. If you don't want to exercise, or you've got your own form of exercise that you would rather do, do that. We are never going to discourage that. This program will help you figure out what works best for you. You're going to learn appropriate caloric loads for the day and per meal. You're going to learn how to match your caloric intake with daily activity levels. You're going to break free from the having to eat a meal every 3 hour cycle. It really is an incredibly empowering experience. Also, the program helps build healthy self-care habits that make the program sustainable for life. And it's wonderful when you figure out that the more you take care of yourself, the healthier, the easier it is to make good choices when it comes to food, when it comes to exercise. And the best part about the program that a lot of people find is it's 4 weeks on and 2 weeks off of the plan. That is what we call a diet break. How many programs encourage you to not do the diet? We do that so you're going to build trust with yourself. You're going to take the skills you learned and you're going to put them to test in the real world. The whole process, it's incredibly empowering. When you reclaim your health, you really do reclaim your life. Join our teams. Sign up at hardwick.life. It's like hardwick.com, but hardwick.life, and use the code podcast20 for 20% off the order. And by the way, you can use that code forever on anything site-wide forever. And we want you to know that we're here for you. You can email me directly at nick@nickhardwick.com. I do. I get back to everybody. Try it. Try me. I'll get back to you. Anything you have. Show recommendations, any questions, any support, any criticism. We're here for that. Throw everything my way. You need help modifying this program to suit your particular needs? All you got to do is ask. We've helped hundreds of people make this program work in their lives, and you can too. All right, guys, back to the show. Check it out, hardwick.life, podcast 20 for 20% off, and we hope to see you on the network soon. Love you guys. Thank you. All right, guys, welcome to the Hardwick Life Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Hardwick. Joining us today is a guy named John Madsen. John is a highly sought-after consultant who teaches high-performance individuals and executive teams how to automate championship behavior to get championship results. His clientele ranges from Olympians, MLB players, NFL players, and corporate execs to the ordinary dude who wants to win despite never playing a single down of high school football. John reached his childhood dream of playing in the NFL after playing for the University of Utah under legendary coach Urban Meyer. Wait till you hear this story. Originally a wide receiver, Madsen was converted to tight end in order to make the team. He was the only undrafted free agent to make the Raiders' main 53-man squad in 2006. On his popular podcast, The Show with John Madsen, his mission is to teach high-performance behavior and mindset for people who refuse to settle for an average AF life. You can book him on your podcast or schedule a consultation with him to transform your body on his website at johnmadsen.com. As he says, you've got a great life, but you're average AF when it comes to your body. Learn how I rip the average out of men and have them looking Fight Club shredded in 90 days. He's an excellent follow on social media at John Madsen Official on Instagram, at John_Madsen on Twitter, and John Madsen on Facebook. Guys, this is going to be a really, really profound episode, and I think has a chance to change some mindsets. I know for me, I left this one just incredibly fired up on life, and there's some good juice in here. So enjoy this one. Thank you for listening. Where are you?
Yeah, I'm in Scottsdale, man. I'm in Scottsdale.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you enjoy it there?
Love it. We just moved, me and my wife, July of last year. I spent most of my time in Salt Lake City. I was born there. Played for the University of Utah. And then after my little short NFL career, I moved back to Salt Lake and had been there for about a decade. And I was just tired of the cold. So we got out to sunny Arizona.
Nice. Yeah, it's crazy. I moved out of San Diego for 16 years. And then speaking of the cold, it's April 20th today when we're recording. And it's snowing in Indiana. And it was like 60 degrees yesterday, and we've been here a year, and my wife and I looked at each other on our walk and we're like, what in the world were we thinking? Like,
why did you move away from San Diego, man?
It was just, you know, it was time. It was time for a little bit, and wanted to explore something else and give it a try and be closer to family for a while. And yeah, I mean, both of us, I think, have agreed that this isn't necessarily the last stop, but for the time being, it's like we had to scratch an itch and check it out. And it's, I tell you, it's been great. I mean, for a lot of reasons, it's been great. Just for me personally, having some time and space and quarantine certainly helped this out. It's like being able to establish a business and being able to write books and being able to kind of get going down the path that ultimately I wanted to get to. But in San Diego, I never could. I didn't have the time, the space, and I had a lot of other obligations, radio, news, doing a bunch of other things. And we own gyms out there, and I just couldn't like separate from any of those. And so this year has been incredible for professional reasons. And then it's been great for my kids, and my family's really happy. So it's all good, but hey, we may end up back there, you know, at some point soon. Who knows?
Awesome, man. Awesome. Yeah. I didn't even know you. Gyms, dude. So did I. That's what I did. I had a gym for 10 years.
Yeah. And I was going to say, you got out of the fitness industry. Not completely out of it, but getting out of, I guess, the gym business. What's going on there? I saw a post recently.
Yeah, man. So dude, are we recording now? Or are we,
we're live. Well, this will all be on. I should have let you know. We're up and running.
I love it. You get the same job either way, man. So dude, when I was done, so when I got cut, I literally remember being in that 24-hour fitness. So this was at the end of my fourth year. I didn't know if I was going to play anymore, kind of in this weird phase of getting on airplanes and going to different teams for different tryouts. 27 years old, and I was working out to kind of stay in shape. And I watched a trainer train a couple high school kids. And these high school kids had their local high school, you know, football shirts on. And I was like, dude, that's not what these kids need, man. They don't need that. And so, you know, cone drills and ladder drills, which, you know, they have their time and place for, you know, different reasons. Right. But I was like, that's not what these kids need, man. And I saw these skinny little scrawny guys like I was. And I'm like, they need this first. And then they need to go earn it in that weight room. Right. And so in a flash, I was like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to open up a gym for high school kids in Salt Lake City, where, you know, my name is somewhat big, and that's where I grew up and people know me because I went to local University of Utah. And I knew nothing about business. I Googled business plan and like stayed up for two nights straight thinking about how to make this business plan. And at the time I was living in Arizona for literally like 9 months because I tried to escape the cold once before. Yeah. The end of my career was in Cleveland. And so Cleveland in December was not fun. I was like, what's the warmest place on the West Coast? Phoenix. Cool. Let's go buy a house there.
Yeah.
The problem was I never played again and I didn't know anybody, had no network. And so then I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go back home or I at least have a chance. And So I opened up, no business knowledge, no nothing, but I knew that I could take a kid and get them to believe in themselves. And ultimately, whether they wanted to be a starter on their high school team or they had aspirations to go farther than that, that was my goal. And I opened it up, no business knowledge, nothing. That first gym shut down in like 14 months after I dropped about 100K on equipment and turf and all the business mistakes, man. Like that was a different ball game for me. I had to learn, but yeah. I never got out of that industry. So I closed down that gym, went to a really small one. And you know, there were stories in between there. But ultimately for 8 of the 10 years I had a gym was high school kids. Then a lot of those kids got scholarships. And then I started doing a lot of NFL combine training from local schools like the University of Utah and people even flying in to go to my warehouse style badass gym, right? And I loved that. But then I became a dad for the first time and I was tired of being, you know, the guy at 4 a.m. training till 8 p.m, split schedule. And I was like, this cannot go on for my life. Like I gotta ascend somewhere. And so 2 years ago, I created a virtual training program, mostly for, you know, men 35 to 50 years old who are entrepreneurs, business guys, high performers. And I'm like, I wanna help you optimize your life and kind of bring this idea of training like a pro to your business. And see what becoming a business athlete would feel like and how much room you have to improve in those areas. And so I just kind of took off there, started a podcast, and that's the lane I've been going into. And so the post you're referring to, I'm retiring from the fitness industry, circling back to day one, I don't really believe that I was really the fitness guy, right? Like I was I'm so much more interested in mindset and this ability to tap into belief and desire and to create. That's really what I do now. I just, when people join my program, it might be a lens, you know, fitness. And then they're like, oh, John does fitness. And I'm like, actually, this is big enough now that I can be like, this is actually not fitness, right? This is absolutely not fitness. This is, I want to teach you how to be so mentally tough and razor sharp that, you know, anything's possible. So long answer to your question, but hopefully I answered it.
Yeah. Fitness is the mode to get to people. Because it is attractive, right? I mean, you put together a good body and a good body of work, and then people say, oh, wow, that looks like I would like to achieve that. But what it takes to get that, right? What it takes to eat properly, to sleep, and to do all the discipline things that you have to do to look like you look, that's the ultimate prize that you get from achieving the body. It's the mind. It's the discipline. It's doing all the little things right. It's the mindset. I think it's really powerful. Was all along that the realization, or as you're going through this and working with men and executives, were you did you have the realization that this is so much more than just working on the body? They're here for a lot more than that.
Dude, I think so. You know, in the beginning, I knew that, but then the marketing message, I tried to like build this thing for a lot of years. And, you know, I had to learn a lot of business, had to learn a lot of marketing, how to craft this message all along. Just like I was with the kids, I knew that it was so much bigger than, you know, counting macros and, you know, the tactics and the strategies. There's a lot of stuff that we can use to get a person Fight Club shredded.
Right.
That's one thing, but I had to know how to bring it to marketplace and have an ability to attract people who had no idea who I was. I don't have a huge social media following. So it's like, it's not like I'm generating, you know, endless leads from my Instagram or anything. It's like, how do I put this message out there with some paid advertisement, and how is it compelling enough that I can grow this business exponentially? And so even though I kind of knew that all along, there's a lot of like, you got to craft that message so it hits that end user right where they're at. And so over time, I was able to finally like just speak this message that attracted my dream customers that were just like on endless flow. Because if they listen to my message, they kind of understand what I'm saying. And by the end of the videos they watch, they're like, oh, I get it. Like this is much more than me just, you know, getting ads. Right. Even though that might be how I have to bring them in and capture attention.
Totally.
They kind of know. But that was a hard message for me because I wanted to speak to successful guys or guys like us that are just driven, right? They have something inside them that are like, I'm not done. Maybe I've gotten beaten down a little bit, but like there's a lot out there. And a lot of these guys are entrepreneurs and business guys or top sales leaders. And so for a while, dude, like I wasn't very successful, to be honest. Like I was successful in reaching my childhood dream of being a professional athlete, but in the business world, I got punched in the face like year after year after year. Like I wasn't great at it. And so I was trying to speak to success, but yet I felt not successful. And it wasn't until I figured out got my own room in order, where then I could really speak eloquently about success and high performance. But then I started to track that success and high performance. So I actually had a lot of work to do on my own mindset, which I had a fairly big ego looking back because I was like, look, I made it to the NFL, never played high school ball. I promise you my mindset's razor sharp. And it was in certain, you know, it's not like this thing that's everything or nothing. It was like in that one area, yes. Like I had this belief and ability to create my dream. However, in business, I was not mentally tough. I was always blaming something external and not taking that responsibility internal. And so when I finally figured out my own stuff, that's when I started, you know, crafting the message to speak to other people.
Back it up a little bit. How did you go from not playing high school football to making it to the NFL? And I know when you got to the NFL, you had to basically switch positions from receiver to tight end to just make the Raiders roster. How did that transpire? Like what happened at Utah when Urban Meyer's coaching there and all of a sudden you're a part of the team and you didn't, what'd you do in high school?
Yeah, dude, I was kind of mad at you when I first started researching you, because on a lot of my, I'm like, dude, I really don't know a lot of people that's never played a single down of high school football and made it to the NFL. And then here you come and you're like, oh, this guy has a podcast too. Oh, this guy likes fitness too. I'm like, we're brothers, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, man. So I'll tell you my story and I'm equally as interested in yours. I love being like, I was a good athlete growing up, 5 years old. Like it was baseball, tennis, golf, basketball. And I started playing football when I was in nine years old, played all the way until my sophomore year of high school. Right. So ninth grade where I grew up was still junior high and it's still Little League. 10th grade was high school. Going into 10th grade in the summer, we had this very first weight conditioning training leading into the football training camp. And so I with like five of my friends went to this very first day and they had, you know, they had the seniors in there. It was like, we were the little scrawny kids. Right. And I was like, whoa, I've never lifted weights before. Right. And just like most high school coaches back in the day, it was like, okay, this is what you're going to do. You're going to max out on deadlift. You're going to max out on squat and you're going to max out on bench and you're going to record your numbers. And I was like,
got to get a good baseline.
Yeah. I'm like, that sounds, yeah, that all looks pretty dangerous. Let's go over to the bench press in the corner and kind of hide for a minute. Right. So we're warming up, dude. And like, you know, Olympic bars, 45 pounds. At this point, I still think in my head, I'm a better athlete than probably the five friends I was with. Yet we get to add 25s on the Olympic bar. So 95 pounds. And they rep it out a couple times to warm, you know, as a warm up. I take it off. The person spotting me takes it off the deal and it just pins me, dude. Like I was I was a tall, scrawny kid. And in that moment, like those kids are just, you know, they're talking crap and we're boys, dude. We're boys in high school, all good. And so I'm laughing along with them. But dude, my confidence kind of shattered in that moment. I was like, yeah, I'm weak, man. Like I am going to get hurt. I start looking around the room and there's, you know, big seniors lifting pretty heavy weight. And I go home, dude. And I told my dad, I'm like, I'm not playing football this year, dad. I'm like, this is what happened. I'm really weak. I want to get stronger. You know, can we just skip football this year? And then, you know, I'll play next year, but I just want to, you know, I want to get stronger. And he's like, yeah, whatever you want. And so I'm so lucky he did this. My dad and mom got me this local strength trainer at this little, you know, rec center. This guy happened to be an assistant with like New Mexico back in the day. And so he had worked with Brian Urlacher and, you know, some other guys. And
he's legit.
Straight up power lifter though, dude, like straight up power lifter. I don't like technique and stuff, probably not the greatest, but this dude beat the crap out of me 3 days a week, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It didn't matter if I had two practices and all the other sports, I was there, dude. And my parents didn't have to push me there. I was like, I'm going there. And half the time on leg day, I'd be throwing up after and be laid out. And other parents would be watching this guy just murder me. And they had to take it easy on this kid. But even though I was in pain, dude, there was something in there that I just loved. And it was because even though the results weren't like spectacularly fast on a scrawny little kid, he was harping on me to eat more. And I was putting pounds on and you could see the change in my body. Interestingly, like I would at a certain point, like as a junior, I was like 6'4" and in the beginning, 160 pounds. So super skinny.
Yeah. Right. Rail.
Yeah. And I could dunk, but barely. You know, so it's like I could kind of lunk it.
Yeah.
And dude, I like after it's like 8 months, I'll never forget. He's like, here's a basketball. I want you to go dunk. And we'd been squatting, literally powerlifting, right? And I'm like, I don't know, you know. And so I went out there and like I was getting rim checked. And he's like, dude, you're just overtrained. Just I'm gonna take the rest of the week off. Next week we're gonna do the same thing. And that next week, No weight training, got a basketball, dude. And I'm hitting the rim like here. So I'm going from like 360 dunk. And I was just like mind blown. My friends to this day, dude, that were on the basketball team in high school with me, they're like, you just woke up and decided you could fly one day. Right. I'm like, no. You didn't see like 8 months of me getting just torn to pieces.
All the work.
Right. Yeah. And so anyways, I go from 6'4", about 160 to 6'4", about 190. Performance was a, you know, that was just a side product of what we were doing. I liked what I saw in the mirror. I liked putting work in. I was doing it to look a certain way too. Like as an adolescent boy, like I'm like,
oh yeah,
I don't want to get in the hot tub with all these girls and cheerleaders and, you know, not even have any packs at all. Like I was lifting for an aesthetic purpose in my own brain, but also the side product was getting better at sports too. Right. So long story short, as I got better at that, as I got, you know, faster and could jump higher, basketball and baseball were my two high school sports. Every year, the football coach is like, John, you got to come out this year, man. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to go pro in basketball or baseball. My dream was to go pro and it didn't need to be in football. It was whatever it was, right?
I feel the same. I am the exact same. I was the exact same way. And I didn't, it's crazy how similar our stories are.
Graduation, dude, high school graduation, my basketball team went 1-39. So my junior year, we went 0-20. My senior year, we won one game. And so there was no scholarship options, even though I was really like athletically on the court.
Yep.
I was very athletic, dude. I was a big guy who could move and dunk and jump and, you know.
Yeah. But you can't get looked at when your team's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was playing, you know, in the post, and I couldn't dribble very good. So I had like a couple small offers clear back at schools I had never heard of. And I was like, I don't know about that. You know, I'm going to go walk on to this junior college, which was about an hour and a half away from my house. So I go up there at registration day. I have a VHS film of my highlights of me dunking and, you know, scoring some points. And I'm talking to the basketball coach, and he said, John, you know, my roster's full. I just want you to know that I have to do tryouts per college rules, but there's not a spot, no matter how good you are. And I don't know if you're good or not. If you want to play basketball, I really highly advise you go do it somewhere else, because my roster is full. And I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to do. We're walking across this grass, you know, field. And my dad says, what are you going to do? And I said, I think I can play wide receiver. Let's go talk to the football coaches. And I hadn't played since ninth grade, right? So I'm like, I know nothing about anything. And my dad's like, okay. So I'm knocking on I'm asking people where the football offices are. I get to the football offices, and these coaches are looking like, who is this? I am 6'4" though. So I do have, right. You know, some
You're height. Imposing.
Yeah. And they're like, can I help you? And I said, I have this basketball film. I wanted to come play basketball. Told them the story about the basketball coach. Haven't played high school. I mean, I didn't play high school football, but I think I can play wide receiver. And I'm speaking really fast like this because it's just kind of spilling out. And I'll never forget. I'm like, look, if I suck, you can cut me. I just want a chance. And they're like, sit down for a minute. They took the film, they plug it in the VCR. And it's like, dude, this kid's doing like 360 dunks. They're like, tryouts are the end of July. We'll let you try out, but we can't promise you anything. And I shook their hands and I'm like, all I want's a chance. So deal. I go back, dude. So I go to this tryout and I don't know how to run a route. I don't know anything. All I know is I can run and jump. So we're doing like one-on-ones, and I'm telling the quarterback, I'm like, dude, go route, just throw it up there. And I'm like, I'm jumping over people, acrobatic catches. And but the coach is like, within a week, they took me back in the office. They're like, don't think about basketball anymore. You have a ceiling that is pretty high. If you focus on this and learn how to play football, there's no telling how far you can go. So I literally redshirt that year. I didn't know what a cover two was. I didn't know anything, right? All I knew was, you know, how to be an athlete out there. So I redshirt, I play my freshman year. I have just phone call. I mean, I'm getting recruited hard as a freshman now, right? Yet I go to the University of Utah, which was my dream school, and Urban Meyer had come in, and nobody really knew who he was other than he took Bowling Green from nobody to, you know, top 25. And there was this article in the newspaper that said, you know what, we got a pretty good squad, but we have nobody at wide receiver. My dad sends me this newspaper. I'm like, I'm going to go talk to him unannounced, right? I'm like, I have no idea how it works. So I drive again with a little bit of highlight film from my junior college, go up to the University of Utah, say, hey, I want to talk to a coach. I have, you know, I go to Snow College. I have one more year, but I want to transfer now. And so this GA pokes his head in and he's like, I got about a 6'5" kid that says he's a receiver and he wants to talk to somebody. Out come Urban Meyer and the wide receiver coach. And they look at, I have my hat on backwards like this, right? Right. And Urban says, take your hat off. First thing he says, it's like, take your hat off. And so I'm like, dude, this guy's scaring me. Like he has that imposing yeah. demeanor right off the bat.
Yes.
So he's like, tell me your story. I'm like, well, here's a film. And I'm trying to explain that I didn't play high school football and why and all this. And he plugs the film in. One of the plays, dude, I'm like running across the field and I just de-cleat this linebacker, just like put him out. Right. And Urban just stops the film and he says, if you block like that, I don't care if you catch one pass, but you can play for me. And that's like, as a receiver, I'm like, that's not really what I want either.
Oh man, gave you the wrong idea. I wanted to catch some passes here.
But whatever. Right. And so anyways, he's like, I'm going to do some homework on you. We'll be in touch. A couple weeks go by. They're calling the Snow College coach. Snow College is like, look, you know, if he plays out, he's going to have scholarship options all over. You might be able to get him. So Urban, you know, invites me back, says, look, this is where you want to play, isn't it? Said, yes. Season ticket holder growing up. Basically says, welcome to the team. Shakes my hand. I call my dad. I'm like, I'm registering for classes, meeting the strength coach. My dad's like, okay, cool. Like, do you have a scholarship? And I'm like, I don't know. I didn't ask. You know, I shook the guy's hand and said, welcome to the team.
I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. And so about 2 weeks later, I knock on his door. I'm like, coach, like, you know, I don't know how I'm going to pay for school. Do I have a scholarship? And he's like, look, John, I haven't seen enough of you. You barely played football. I'll promise you, if you contribute to this team, you'll have a scholarship, but I don't have anything for you now. So I played my sophomore year and earned a scholarship that year and, you know, was full ride the rest of the time. Won a Fiesta Bowl with Alex Smith as a quarterback, you know, had an epic run with Urban and ultimately, you know, was supposed to be a really high draft pick coming out my senior year. Mel Kiper had me as like the fourth receiver to get drafted that year. 3 games to go, I broke my leg and, you know, that took me out of the combine. I couldn't run for 10 months. So the draft came and went and Oakland called me, gave me $5,000 and a plane ticket as an undrafted guy. And there I was, man, once again, walking on with, you know, all the odds against me and, you know, ultimately made opening day roster. The very first game I played was against the Chargers that year. And
no kidding. Who was the coach then?
So we had Art Shell my rookie year.
Yeah.
Then Lane Kiffin came in.
That's right.
And then Tom Cable. And then, yeah, dude, I had 5 coaches in a short 3.5 year career.
So Oakland for a long time was just a revolving door. They couldn't, no stability.
I was wearing number 10 as a wide receiver. You know, at this point I was 6'5", you know, legit 6'4¾", 225 pounds and a little slow off of the broken leg though. Like that was kind of right. The issue. Like I wasn't really healthy. For a minute. And I got to OTAs and they're just like, what jersey do you want? I'm like, well, all you got is 10. So let's take that. And I literally was like, it's only a matter of time before I get cut. I was doing, like individual drills and then just taking a knee the rest of the time. My dad's like, how's it going? I'm like, I don't even know why I'm here. Like, I'm not getting any run. Like there's no reps. I'm like, I wish they would just cut me so I could go get a shot somewhere. Right.
Yeah.
And training camp, it was like the last OTA before training camp. For whatever reason, there was a couple tight ends were hurt that day. And one tight end had a family emergency and there was 2 guys running. And so they were running scout, right? And they were trying to prepare for the Chargers, which was going to be the first game. And so, you know, the tight ends were just running down the field, like trying to be Antonio Gates. One guy's throwing up on the sideline. Just run into that. And so
he's dying.
So this is critical for the defense to get a good look. And in the huddle, they come out without a tight end because one guy's gasping for air, the other guy's throwing up. And the defensive coordinator just loses it. Like, we don't have a tight end, like yelling at the offensive, you know how it is. Like,
yeah,
get your shit together and get somebody in there, right? And I'm like, I'm not thinking anything of it. I'm a wide receiver. I have my helmet down, just me on the field. Offensive coordinator looks at me, he's like, number 10.
He doesn't even know. He's like, you.
And he shows me the card, you know, how on the scout team and it's a corner. He's like, run a corner route. And I'm like, okay, get in 3-point stance for the first time in my life, really. And the number one pick that they picked that year was like 7th overall was a safety. He walks up on me and I take a jab step, grab his jersey, throw him to the ground, run a corner for like 70 yards. And I have a grin from ear to ear because it was the first time I was even allowed to play like this whole off season. And our defensive coordinator at the time, Rob Ryan, loses control, dude, like kicks me out of practice for throwing that number one pick down. And I'm like, dude, like if I was at Utah, I'd be getting high five. Like that was awesome. And I didn't know, dude, first pick, you don't really do that to them. Right. And so I get kicked out. And so I'm walking off the field with my helmet. Like that's my shot. Problem was there was no more tight ends to run. They were dead on the field. So running back out at me, and he's like, dude, F that guy, like get back in here, right? So I strap my helmet on. I'm supposed to be Antonio Gates for the next 5 plays and I catch like 4 balls and Randy Moss is on the sideline and he's like, who is number 10, right? And I'm just following him. And from that day, every single day they'd be like, hey, go down with the tight ends for a little bit. Right. And so I knew there was this like this turning of the tide. I'm like, I was cool with it. I was trying to make the team. And then I went to training camp, check in, go into the offensive meeting room. go in with the wide receivers. The wide receiver coach says, hey, Mr. Davis said you're with the tight ends. There was no discussion. It was just like, if you want to make the team, that's where you are, man. And so I was number 9 on the depth chart. Think about it. I didn't know what a 9 technique was. I didn't know any. In fact, the tackles hated me because they're like, this guy's an idiot. I'm used to reading corner safety. Like, whatever technique is what, I have no idea, right? And I was pretty protected that year because whenever they wanted like a tight end to catch a ball, they'd just be like, John, go in there, run a route, break someone down, right? And so I didn't really ever have to learn. So I found myself in situations in the preseason where I was just like, dude, I just get myself wide open, catching balls, running around like a wide receiver playing tight end, and end up going from number 9 to number 3, and they kept me that year. So I was playing a position I barely knew how to play and never really had the time to develop into a true tight end,
right?
Which would have been fine. However, 4 different coaching changes. Every time that happens, it was like, you're tight end. Why don't you know this stuff? And I'm like, well, I kind of am a tight end.
I just got here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, man, it was complete dream come true. Like, long story, but dream come true.
Oh, great story. That's a great story. And then transitioning out, what was that like?
Dude, I mean, transitioning out, I don't know if you played longer than me. Like, I'm kind of blessed in a way. I'm seeing some of my friends who played a long time now, just now kind of get out. I was out at 27 and I made 400,000 3 years in a row, like 400,000, 400,000 right. Bonuses and stuff. You have 400 to 500.
Yeah. Yep.
Scored a couple touchdowns, but ultimately, like, that was it. Right. And so that's not a huge amount of money, but it felt huge when I was 25. Right. Like, that was like, holy, these checks just stack up on every single week.
Oh, yeah.
And so when I got out, I was like, immediately I opened up the gym. Like I said, without business, you know, dropped about 100K on that, signed a 5-year lease, did all the stuff, didn't know what an LLC was. People were talking to me and I'm like, I'm an idiot. I know, you know, I guess I just know football. Like, this stuff.
You were like, it was like when you were playing tight end. Like, I don't know, but I'm going to make it work.
Exactly. And so I went through that, but I also went through personally, like, dude, I started going to Vegas and was, you know, I never got into drugs, luckily, but I would drink way more than I should. Mm-hmm. And I went to the party scene and I went through this phase. I think like there was a 3-year period, 27 to 30, that it was just like, dude, who am I, dude? Like, who am I without, oh, that's John. He played in the NFL. That was the hardest thing for me because for a moment, that's who I was to everybody. And I bought into it a little bit too. Like, I play in the NFL. Without that, it was like, I was trying to validate myself through all the wrong stuff, being like, I don't need the NFL to be this, right? Yes. And so sorry about those notifications.
Oh, it's fine. The more that I've talked to guys and the longer I've been out, 6 years now, the more I realize that it's inevitable that is the thought process. Who am I without this? Where you do and we're warned and cautioned endlessly to not let your identity be wrapped up in the game. It's impossible not to. I really do believe it's impossible not to be intertwined into that being your identity if you're going to give yourself any chance at success. Because I believe to be successful at anything, you've got to be fully committed. You've got to give everything you have and then some to that, which includes your identity. And then the withdrawal from that, or the other side where that is ripped from you, it's a heartbreaking journey. It's a soul searching one. And I think it's long and it's arduous. And I feel like finally 6 years out, I am completely at peace with myself, but it's taken that long. You know, it's taken all of 5 and 6 years to get there.
It took me a long time too, man. Like, and to your point, like, I believe identity at the root of success, or, you know, if you want success, right?
Yeah.
That identity is the most important part, and holding on to a past identity, the football John, like, that had to go away. That at some point had to go away. And when everybody knows, it's your environment knows you as that too, they buy in too. And so to get completely out of that is super, super hard. Luckily, I had this fitness thing. Like I said, the trainer who changed my life at 16, that was like, I would, if I wasn't getting paid to do this fitness thing now, I'd still be reading like how to get jacked, right? Like I love that, man, to this day. So it makes it really easy for me, but to be able to go back to that. And then, but then finally now I'm like, the football me is like, that's gone, dude. You see the jerseys on the wall. Like that's a reminder to me that like anything is possible. That's a reminder to me as a kid to be like, well, you know, I believe there's three different belief systems that a person has, and two of them will hold a person back. And there's one of them that I ultimately had when I was a little kid that I got to remind myself every day. And the first one is, it's impossible, right? It's like, it's impossible. And that's usually not a huge one for people, because the second one is, it's not impossible, but it is impossible for me. Like, you can do it, but I can't do it. That's usually where people get stuck, right?
That's right.
It's impossible might be like, well, I believe it's impossible to, you know, go to Mars, right? But Elon Musk doesn't. So still, it would be like, if I'm breaking a person's belief down, whether it's fitness or limiting beliefs or whatever, they usually in that category number two, where it's like, John, I can see why you can do it, but I can't do it. And then it's my job to, here's all these examples, right? Why can't you do it?
Yeah. And you probably hear it a lot. Well, you just are genetically blessed. You had the ability to make it to the NFL. You didn't play. So all of your talent is way through the roof. But then you break it down and you give people the process that it took to get there, and you share your story and all of the details. And like your high school buddies, right? It's when they're like, oh my God, you just woke up one day and thought you could fly. It's like, no, you missed all of that for the last 8 months, 3 days a week, getting broke off by this trainer and all of the work that went into it. That's how. If not, I would have been 6'4", 160 and lunking.
Yeah, exactly, dude. And I mean, I always go back to like the story of Roger Bannister too, the 4 minute mile. Up until a certain point, it was impossible. A human being runs 4 minutes, 4 minute mile, they'll die, right?
Yeah.
So that's like, that's the belief system where there's certain things out there where like, that's just a belief, right? Roger Bannister does it, and within 2 weeks or so, more people do it. Within a year, a lot of people have done it. So it's like, see, that's where people get caught up, is those limitations are in the mind. The 1 minute mile was impossible, but Roger was like, where can you be Roger, right? That's like Elon Musk stuff, where it's like, stuff is everybody but you. And then you have that second part where now it's easier. If someone, am I cutting out a little bit, dude?
You did for a moment, but you're good.
Okay, cool. So for everybody is, you know, it's easier when somebody else has an example, because it's like, oh yeah, like, well, that person can do it, but I can't. Third one, what a single person on the planet can do, I can also do, right? So what one can do, all can do. For whatever reason, when I was a kid, I'd look up to these NBA players and Major League Baseball players and NFL players. And I think to myself, I'm like, they came from somewhere. Like, they were just a kid too, who went through Little League, and like, they ultimately got there. So if they can do it, I can do it. And I had that, dude. Like, that was the one thing, the only reason that I made it, because I can promise you there was a million kids more talented than me, more than millions.
Yeah.
I just kept going and like was willing to suck and get better and willing to suck. And so it's this whole growth mindset that I didn't know that I didn't know, but I would do it kind of naturally in sport. Yeah, I had to relearn that, because when I got into business and I started failing again, then it was like I was caught back up into those limitations where I'm like, oh, so-and-so can do it, but you know, I can't. And so I had to really check myself. And so those jerseys, like when I look at them, I'm just like, it's a reminder. What one can do, all can do, right? Like, if one person can do it, I can do it. And so the identity is not tied up into the football player, John. It's just like, that stuff's just an artifact of reminder for me to do stuff that's cool in the future.
Yes, that you can, and to channel that inner child in you. And I think it's important to the point of the growth mindset, because I talk about this all the time as well, is reminding yourself to have that growth mindset where you may have lucked into it. I may have lucked into it as a kid early on, for whatever reason. I'm the second in my family. And I think for the second child in a family, it's a little bit easier. For the younger, it's just a little bit easier to have that kind of resilience and that grit. And we may have lucked into that, but then, like you said, you get out of the game and then you start failing. But then, hold on, I've got to check myself here. Why would I expect to have success in this when I've never done this before? I've never opened a business. I don't even know what an LLC is. I don't know any of the legal side of things. I don't know how to market. I don't know how to brand. Like, what do you know that would expect you to have any type of success other than you do know how to train people and you do know what you're talking about when it comes to the body? But that reminder to yourself even is really healthy, I think, for your clients now and the people that you serve. That's like, no, I didn't just luck into the growth mindset. I did luck into the growth mindset, but it is a continual process to remind myself that, hey, you're going to fail and you just got to get up and keep moving. And these are great opportunities to learn, adapt, change, invent, get creative, whatever it is that's going to allow you to navigate past whatever obstacle presents itself.
Yeah, dude, 100%. And looking back, I was growth in, you know, certain areas, yeah. But I was also very, right? Like even at the top level, like that transition to tight end, the reason I'm so enamored by mindset is, you know this because you played and you played for a long time. At the top level, you might have a Randy Moss on the team, or you might have, you know, a couple guys that are just so, you know, the outliers, right?
So it's gifted.
Like, yeah, dude. Like, yeah. You're just meant for it, if you will. But it's like not very many people. Like, for the most,
it's true.
I'm like, I know without a shadow of a doubt that the only thing that separated me from 3.5 year John to maybe a 11, 12, 13 year John in the NFL was I did not have this mindset locked in. Like it was growth enough to get me there. But then once I achieved like that goal, I didn't believe big enough that I could be Hall of Fame or All Pro. It was like the game was bigger than me. And so that ate me up a little bit. I lost confidence and found myself out of it. And looking back, I'm like, that had nothing to do with talent. Like I look back at all the guys I played with and I'm like, I wasn't really willing to be this growth mindset in a new position and to learn the things I needed to learn to ultimately be that tight end in the NFL. I was so fixed in my, I'm like, I'm not good at blocking, right? I'm not a good blocker. I'm a wide receiver. And I even going back an identity thing, right?
Yeah.
Where ultimately, if I had that growth mindset and that was taught to me, I would have been like, yeah, I suck now, but like, give me a year, right? That's all it would have taken.
Or I don't know what a 9 technique is. I don't know what a 7 technique is. I don't know what an over versus an under is. I don't, what is the Sam linebacker? There's so many details that you would have had to learn, but you could have learned. And good for you, by the way, for not blaming the position change. You, and I think this is what successful people do, is they accept as much of the blame as they possibly can. And then great leaders share the acclaim, right? It's like, well, you know, they write it off a little bit. Ah, that's just, you know, that was that kind of, but accept the blame. What could I, and really it comes back to, what could I have controlled about the situation? What could I have done better to help out?
Exactly, dude. One of my most famous podcasts, not famous, my most popular podcast, popular post that I've ever written was the day my life changed, the day I forgave Lane Kiffin, right? Because for a lot of years, I blamed Lane Kiffin for ending my career. A lot of years, dude. Like when I was tail spinning, it was like, you know, F Lane Kiffin, I hate that guy, blah, blah, blah. You know, he ruined my career, derailed all this stuff, right? And then but I knew what really happened. Deep down, like the twinge was there. It's like, no, I wasn't willing to do X, Y, and Z. And I let my confidence get shattered. Had nothing to do with him. Wasn't the position change. It was me. Is he my favorite coach in the world? No, but he actually had nothing to do with this, right? And so it's like, it's hard because like, you know, like my dad's my best friend and he'd be like, you know, Lane Kiffin, if it wasn't for Lane Kiffin, you know, what parents do to kids when they're 12, it's like, it's devastating, right? Because it's not that 100% responsibility. And one day I'm like, dude, it's not Lane Kiffin, John. Like, has nothing to do with anybody. Like, it's you. It's all you, 100% you. You don't even need to give Lane Kiffin 1% blame. It's not 99-1, it's 100-0. And once I did that, that was finally when I started being successful. It's like, I can almost pinpoint like 33, 34, maybe it's like right in there where it's like that mentality shifted everything for me. Everything went from external, like affecting the way I felt, affecting the way I did stuff, to I'm in control of everything internal and I'm going to create this and manifest this external. And I believe that everything that we're going through, like every single person has it backwards. It's like they're reactionary to everything outside of them. And if they truly go internal, that external, you know, gets shaped the way they want it to, or, you know, and so that's an out there way of thinking maybe for some, but it's like, once I made that shift, dude, everything in my life changed.
So, yeah, I thought this was, to that point, you had a post recently, you and your wife bought two really nice cars. One, a G-Wagon, which is going to make my wife super jealous because she really wants a G-Wagon and she has for years. And I'm so refusing to spring for one. And then you got a Bentley, which was super awesome. So I see you doing that. And I'm like super pumped for you. But here's a snippet from the post. And I think this is really profound. And it goes to that. What you were just talking about is I used to think we were creators, but now I understand that we are great revealers. Everything you desire is already here. It's up to you to reveal it to yourself. Change your filters, change your life. Talk about that a little bit, because it is a mindset shift, but I think it's a really important one.
Yeah. I read this. I heard this study or this example one time where two groups of people would divide themselves into two groups. One group thought that they were the luckiest people on the planet. The other group said that they were unlucky. So like, imagine $1,000 falling from the sky. One group's like, yeah, it would fall right next to me and land in my buddy's lap, not me. And the other group's like, nah, like I'm lucky. I win stuff all the time. My name gets drawn out of drawings, all this stuff. Those two groups then, the researchers wanted to identify like what would happen if they staged this thing where a $20 bill was laid out in plain sight for the same place for every single person. And everybody in this little study was an actor or actress, except for the people who were being studied. So they staged this in a restaurant where there was, you know, they go order food, they go in, everybody would be in on this, but them. And there was like a 95% correlation to the people who found the $20 bill was people who identified as lucky. And then like literally nobody from the other group who thought they were unlucky could see the $20 bill. And so like
people couldn't even see it.
Well, so they can. So here's the interesting part. If you go deeper, our unconscious mind is like responsible for everything. So if someone's listening to this right now, what you're not thinking about until I say it is like how much you're blinking, right? Like you're if you're like, man, you're blinking too much or I'm blinking too much, you start to notice it. But before I said it, you have no idea that exists, right? Temperature and blood pressure and all this other stuff. So think about like a million times a million bits of information per second, like a quantum computer, right? So it's taking in everything, but based on your beliefs, your filters, your memories, your limiting beliefs, all the stuff that you believe to be true, it's filtering everything out of the reality and revealing the stuff that you're most often focusing on, right?
Yep.
So what happens is people think they see with their eyes, and you do, right? Like your eyes see the $20 bill. However, the other people probably saw it was getting filtered out. The unlucky people, because they believe they were unlucky, to keep themselves true to themselves, that unconscious mind is like I said, it's like a NASA computer. It's like not important for this person. They're literally not important. And so like for me, this is when everything started getting really exciting, when I started to like really, you know, I'd say, I guess, you know, be pretty successful in business, is I started to realize that it was an internal game. I started to question my limiting beliefs or my so-called filters. What am I not seeing that exists already that the really successful people are seeing and noticing all the time based on their belief systems? And when I went to work on that, and started to understand that like truly what you're focused on, they say what you focus on expands, and everybody can like post that little snippet on Instagram and be like, that's awesome. But until you really embody it, you're not going to notice any change. So, you know, one of the things me and my wife do is every single morning we, you know, our 3-year-old daughter comes into our bed with us at like 6 a.m. We go get coffee. She's drinking her little juice. And, you know, we like cheers coffee in the morning, me and my wife, and we just say winning streak. Like this is a winning streak. Right.
Nice.
And it's like, you go and you find that parking spot that's wide open. It's like winning streak. I start to notice all the wins, and then I see more wins. It's like, I'm my unconscious mind is revealing to me all the good stuff is out there, because everything we do, man, is a frame, right? Like we're framing reality. And most of us, myself included, was framing everything in this problematic frame. It's easy to do. You're watching the news every night. It's problems. It's fear, right?
Always problems.
So you're focused on all the stuff you're consuming is not food. It's all the garbage music, garbage stuff on the news, garbage articles, garbage on social media. If you're consuming all that stuff, your reality is going to show you more of that stuff.
Yeah.
If you filter and you protect yourself and put yourself in this positive bubble, all you notice is the good stuff. And then you know how to focus on staying in that energetic state. And it's like, dude, my life completely changed. If I would have played football with that knowledge, I do not know how good I could have been. I had no idea. And so that's what gets me excited. Like now I'm like, man, you can be relatively successful and never really think about that. But what if you did? Right. And it's like, that's magic to me. It is magic.
It is magic. That is super profound. Notice the wins, you see more wins. I think it's wonderful. And I had a post recently about people who say, and this is a really common phrase that we say now, well, the problem is, it's like, stop telling me about the problems. I don't want to hear about the problems. I don't watch the news. I don't read crappy articles. If you're negative on my feed, you're off. Like I have no problem unfollowing people or muting negative people. It's like, I don't have time or space or energy in my life for negativity. Like we're doing the positive thing here. I love the toast to the winning streak. I'm going to adopt that. I think that is really cool. To the point about seeing things, I actually learned this. I'm going through this really cool NFL transition coach training, and we got the chance to be taught a little bit by the Colts team psychologist. Her name's Dr. Elizabeth White. And she brought up a really awesome thing. It's to your point, is a concept in its science called the reticular activating system. And it's basically that. So when, for example, you're going to buy a car, well, you keep noticing the same cars. It's like, oh, I'm going to buy, she used the example of the Honda Accord. She goes, I'm going to buy a Honda Accord. And then you start noticing, well, everybody drives a Honda Accord. Super cool. Oh, my neighbor's been driving a Honda Accord for 5 years now. And then in my head, part of it is, you know, I remember when we named our first son Hudson, I thought, well, I've only heard the name once ever in my life. And then all of a sudden, I see Hudsons are everywhere and family members are calling going, hey, my neighbor down the street's name's Hudson. I thought, man, I thought we were being unique here, but it's part of that. It's what you allow your brain to focus on, or what you tell rather your brain to focus on. It's going to continue to point that out around you. So when you focus on the positive, it's going to show you all the positives in your life. But when you start focusing on the negatives, it's going to start pointing out all the negatives. So it's these self-perpetuating cycles that get created that you really have to be mindful of what you allow to even come into your brain. Because in my opinion, I think habits are created quickly because of that reticular activating system, where you just continue this little vicious cycle until you break yourself out of it. So mindfulness has become a huge part of my program, where I want to know, what's my thought process? Why am I having this? Is that just a thought, or is that my thought, or did it just kind of cross into my brain somehow? And now I need to find a way to get rid of it.
Dude, that, I mean, from a scientific standpoint, exactly. Everything that I just explained, that, you know, in story form, is the reticular activating system. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, it's so amazing. But it's like, sometimes it'll take a story for somebody to be like, wow, like that's so, that connects, because it's so simple, yet the most life-changing thing that a person could ever, you know, go through. I mean, think of, and a different topic than the reticular activating system, but same in terms of like mindset, right? Like how powerful is your mind? You've probably heard the study of the three groups of people who had ACL, they needed an ACL surgery, right? Have you heard this one?
Yeah, maybe
you
I haven't heard anyway, this.
They divided them into three groups. Group number one, they do a complete ACL redo, right? Which they signed up for. Group number two, doctors would go in, do something minor, wasn't complete, what normally would happen with an ACL. Group number three, they literally would just cut them and stitch them so the scar was the same and not do anything to the knee. And in this study, they interviewed the people later and said, how much pain, you know, how are you limited in your movement? And they would self-regulate, not knowing which group. They didn't know if they didn't get surgery or not. And the surgery and the study came back out and that nothing done to their knee had the same benefits as people who got complete ACL redo. Their mind is, you're listening to this, your mind is that powerful. It can, like, it has healing properties. It has, you know, it can do amazing things. And so, like, to not understand this mechanism that we all are operating with, this freaking computer dictates a part of our life, and to go along and just, like, be on this pattern of what you've been doing for the past, you know, year, 5 years, and hoping for things to change without going internal and changing and reprogramming mind, you're just going to keep getting what you got. You know, like you do for your clients, is you go in there, you help them reprogram, and then they get a different result, right? You take them out of that pattern that they just don't know what they don't know. Bam, start getting something significant. A lot of it truly is as simple. If you don't work with you or you don't work with me, changing your focus and understanding that reticular activating center and understanding that what you focus on expands, and trying to wake up every morning with a winning streak and mindfulness and to focus on your wins and to actually know what you want, right? That stuff starts showing up. And, you know, people might think that we're magic as coaches. And it's like, you know, yeah, we had to go through this process and really learn it and embody it. Now we're giving it to you, but it's actually not that, you know, a lot of it is pretty simple. You know, the most powerful stuff is usually in plain sight. We just haven't considered it yet.
Speaking of, and we're coming close on time, just, I see the vision board behind you. And I know people talk about journaling, people talk about vision boards, but a lot of people don't do it. But it kind of comes to knowing what you want. Like, what are you trying to get out of this? And I guess it comes to your, why am I doing this? You know, the vision board, talk to me about that. You obviously leave it in plain sight.
Plain sight, dude. So, you know, and some people's like, dude, John's a little bit out there. I mean, I just, my life radically transformed, you know? And so I hired this coach at my wit's end one time. I went through a ton of different coaches. I thought I knew what I wanted, right? And I had tons of people say, John, you need to do a vision board, or I watch The Secret, or read books. And, you know, dude, I'd get it, but I'd be like, I know what I want. I don't really don't need to spend time to do a vision board, right? And then I paid this guy $40K, who was like, he's a brain reprogrammer. And this is where my success really kind of, like, this happened when I was like, I'm all in. I need somebody to help me figure out this mindset piece that, you know, has been missing for quite some time. And one of the first things he told me to do was do a vision board. Because I gave him $40K, I was like, well, I'm just going to be a beginner here. And, like, even if I think it's stupid, I'm just going to go through this process.
I'll do it.
So he made me do a vision board. One of the other things he made me do is have a list of 100 material things that I wanted. And I had to come up with 100. And then the next thing was 100 experiences that I wanted to experience. So those two things are different. Experiences might be a trip, might be tasting the best steak in the world at such and such restaurant, just whatever experience you want. And I came back to him after like 15 things, and I'm like, dude, like, I don't know what else I want, you know? Because if you guys do this, and I urge you to try, you'll get to 15 things or 10 things, and you'll be like, I'm not a materialistic person, or like, I don't need a Bentley. I don't need a G-Wagon, right? And so this is what I was doing for my whole life. I was like, I was playing this needs versus wants. But he's like, John, if you had a magic genie and it didn't take away from anybody else, and you could just have whatever you wanted, Like, it doesn't mean you can only have one car. You could have 10 if you want. Like, need has nothing to do with it. So stop playing this, I don't need that game. When we're kids, we're taught that all the time. You don't need this, right? So it's like, I'm trying to unlock this your brain's ability to go at, like, he said, look, consciously you write goals, but your unconscious is what's going to make those happen or not happen. So you're constantly playing this game that you don't need it, and you're telling your unconscious that you don't need it, therefore it's not going to give you the effort and create those micro behaviors for you to actually get it. Come to me with 100. And so I'd literally be Googling stuff. I'm like, I don't even know. I'm like, well, yeah, if I had a magic genie, I want a yacht or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And so I had to do this, dude, and it was way harder than I thought, because I'm a happy person. You know, I don't technically need a lot of stuff. I could be happy with
sure.
a lot less, right? But that's not the game. And so I started to unlock this ability to go after what I wanted instead of settling for what I needed. Go after what you want and don't settle for what you need. And that was the first exercise in this like year-long mentorship where I had to practice this over and over again. When I bought the cars, I called him. I'm like, dude, this is, you know, what's the line here? You know, what's the line? And he's like, dude, shut down right now. Go buy those cars. And I was like, what? You're like one out of a million person that would tell me to do this right now. But okay, right? And what happened in the next 4 months is I doubled my business like that, right? Had nothing to do with the cars. Had everything to do with me living in congruence with telling myself that I'm worthy of what I want. Instead of being like, I could have been like, I don't really need the G-Wagon. I'll get a little bit less, right?
Yeah.
I'm not telling you to go buy expensive cars right now. Your situation's your situation. However, just really watch where this shows up. How many times you do settle for what you technically need instead of going after what you want, because we're conditioned to say, you know, money's not happiness, or that car's not happiness, or even in fitness, like a six pack is not happiness either. So people are so caught up in equating things that shouldn't be equated at all, because I know rich people who are very happy. I know rich people who are unhappy. I know poor people who are happy, and I know poor people who are very unhappy, right? And so we're trying to create this equation all based on how we grew up or these belief systems. And I try to tell all my clients, like, look, getting you a six pack is not going to make you happy. Getting that $1 million is actually not going to make you happy either. Happiness is a state of mind. You need to be able to anchor that and feel that, whether you live in a box or a mansion. However, if you're capable of creating a life and you want to live in a mansion, don't settle for what you need because that's a dichotomy for you. Rip the dichotomy out of it. Go for what you want and be happier either way, right? And
yeah. And
I think that holds people back, and that's kind of at the root of self-sabotage, because people get to this point and they literally will self-sabotage themselves back down because they're not in alignment. They're not okay with wanting more. They think they want more, but then unconsciously they have a problem with it, right? And I'm like, I had to be aligned. And so the vision boards and the wants are like constant reminders for me. Like, I'm in alignment. Has nothing to do with happiness. I'm just going to live my life the way I want to live it. And I'm going to bless people, and I'm going to impact, and I'm going to inspire to the best of my ability. The vision board is a reticular activating center exercise. It's always there. I don't know if the people will be able to see it, but King Leonidas is up in that left, you know, that little corner. I look at King Leonidas when I watch the movie. I'm like, I want to look like that, right?
Yeah.
People come into my program, I'm like, send me a picture of something like someone you want to look like. I need to know, right? I want to know what is appealing to you. And I want you to keep it there because I want you to see it every day. So I just practice, you know, some of the stuff that I tell my clients to do.
Beautiful. Dude, that was awesome. I'm fired up. I'm going to do this now. I'm going to put together a vision board. I'm going to do 100 experiences and 100 material things that I want, because I do. I believe that I believe that, you know, it's, and I think a lot of these things that you're teaching against, but I also believe in coming from a world of abundance creates more, or coming from a mindset of abundance creates more. And you have the ability then to help more people. And that to me is super profound. But depending on where you came from or what you came from or whatever, that is the, we don't need that. And I hear when you said that, I say that to my boys all the time. You don't need that, right? Because the thought is, just like you said, happiness is an internal state and it shouldn't depend on what you have or what you don't have. However, if you do want it, go get it, right? You did want to be a professional athlete. I did want to be a professional athlete. I didn't give a hell what sport it was in. I filled up in high school, notebook after notebook, practicing my signature, hoping that one day I was going to be famous enough to sign autographs and take pictures. That's all I wanted. Baseball, basketball, I didn't care what it was going to be in. I was like, be famous, right? And then you actually went and did what you were planning to do as a kid. And then at some point you're like, well, that's enough. That's enough. I've, you know, not too much now. And I do this all the time. It's like, not too much. But it's, and this is another concept that came to me from the transition coach training, is you should dream surf. And it's, you have permission to dream. And then further, like as I'm telling my own kids and I tell kids that I get the chance to speak to, dream big. Don't let anybody tell you what you can and you can't achieve. And then outwork everybody. And it's the same message, but then we stop dreaming. We're still working, but man, it'd be nice to dream a little bit again. So I'm going to do this.
Dude, do it.
It's awesome.
Real quick, and then we can end. I was doing the experiences, and one of the things I'm like, I did on experiences, I knew I wanted to expand my circle. I was like, I want to be around these guys, right? And so I have like guys on the list that I'm like, I want to be around these got to be my friends, right? And so we moved from Salt Lake City to Scottsdale in a jump that was like really rapid, you know, crazy stuff got us here. But before that, like a year ago, on one of my guys was, I don't know if you know Bob Proctor, you know, big famous, you know, he's famous for The Secret and right.
Yeah.
Book. So anyways, oh, yeah. It's like 85. And I'm like, dude, that guy, I love listening to that guy. That guy is like magic. Right. And so anyways, he's like, and it wasn't in order. It was just kind of me free flowing thought. And so I put him on the list on the experiences. Don't think anything of it. Right. For a minute, like I'll look at it from time to time, but I don't really think anything of that particular name. We moved to Scottsdale. I could work from home. I could work from anywhere, but I bought this studio in this Cube Exec place where I'm like, you know what? I'd rather work here. It's quiet and I can do my stuff out of it. Guy right next to me, he's like, dude, I heard you talking about Rob Proctor and my brother is his partner. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, my brother's his partner. Let's go to dinner. I go to dinner and like guy's texting Bob and he's like, dude, you got to meet this guy. And he's got to meet this guy. He's sitting right next to me. And I'm just like, dude, it's powerful to like put down what you ultimately want and to really think about this stuff, whether it's the material stuff or the experiences. And then a year will go by. And I want you to really notice, like, do me a favor and notice like how many kind of random occurrences you find yourself like crossing stuff off the box. And you're like, I didn't even technically know that I wanted it that much, but I put it down and there's some power in like that focus, man. It's magic. So I hope you do it. And I hope your listeners do it too, because that's the stuff that like, I kind of geek out about sometimes. And it like gets me fired up. It's most people walk around and they don't really know what they want. So let's focus all our energy like a laser beam on that stuff and watch it appear.
Beautiful. John, thank you. How can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, I think the best way is just John Mattson Official on Instagram. I handle all my own social stuff. So, you know, if you send me a message, I'll definitely respond and try to respond to everybody. But I just want to say thank you, man. I want to have you on my show too, because we can talk all day. And I want to dig into your story too. So let's schedule that soon.
Love to. Thank you, John. Yeah, and I would greatly appreciate the opportunity. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Great job.
Awesome, man. Happy to meet you. And thanks again.
All right, brother. Thank you.